Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 830. It's the 25th of July, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Lincoln Moore, Executive Director of Decal Oil, DKL is ticker there, and Lincoln talks about their half-year production figures, the start of their second palm oil project, and the possibility of a third. Plus, I also have João Andrade, CEO, and Dr. Peter Hollands, Chief Executive Officer of Wide Sales Group, that's WDC ticker, and they discuss their two recent launches, one targeting the dental market, and their Cell Plan e-commerce platform. I also have Bonnie Hughes, mining specialist at Northland Capital Partners, talking about Keras Resources, KRS. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs on the platform too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lincoln Moore, Executive Director of Decal Oil. That's DKL ticker. Lincoln, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a busy couple of weeks for you, and we'll get into the news flow that you've released in the last couple of weeks in a minute. But for people new to the podcast or have not heard of the company, Lincoln, give us a brief summary as to what Decal Oil is all about, please.
Justin, we're Decal Oil is a palm oil producer based in Cote d'Ivoire, listed on AIM. We have one project up and running, which is a profitable project, which is the feedstock for which is coming from thousands of smallholders. We've been growing production, revenue, and profitability at that project over the last 2 to 3 years, and I'll go into a bit of detail in a moment. And we're in a position now to expand. And we're looking at a couple of different projects, one in Cote d'Ivoire and one in Ghana, to increase the scale of our overall project base.
Yeah, well, let's go back, like you said, let's dig down to the figures. You released half-year production figures last week. Take us through some of the highlights, if you could, Lincoln.
Justin, I guess the headline number that we put in our production update for the 6 months was revenue was up 22%. Really, there's two basic stories driving that. We had excellent pricing through H1 this year versus H1 last year, and production overall the 6 months was marginally down, but down a bit little more than we were probably capable of producing in the second quarter. I mean, just really to elaborate on pricing first, people who have been following us some time will recall the first half of last year. We had the Nigeria currency issue, which really froze the trade of palm oil in West Africa at a really inopportune time for us, right in the middle of the high season, and that really put pressure on our local pricing, particularly in Q2, May and June, and we're unable to get the maximised price for our palm oil through that period, and that really obviously had an impact on our results in 2016, albeit it was again a year of profit growth. This year the reaction to that really last year was to increase our storage capacity from 5,000 tonnes to 8,000 tonnes, and that's really worked quite well and has allowed us during the high season period to control the pricing much better. It's a time of the year where not just us but our competitors and refineries tend to be up to their elbows, so to speak, in crude palm oil, and having that extra storage has allowed us to have sensible pricing negotiations inflation. So we've achieved better prices locally and internationally. The prices have, of course, been stronger through H1 this year versus last year. So that's really helped us tremendously in terms of our results for H1 2017. You know, offsetting this to some degree was you know, drop in production really in Q2. I mean, Q1 we had production uplift versus Q1 last year, and in Q2, you know, we had about a drop of production, and really they go through the factors of that. I think the external factors that we're seeing is that the high season was, and it does vary from year to year, but slightly earlier. And what we're seeing really is slightly peakier too. So through February, March and April, and April actually this year was actually pretty good. You know, we're seeing a very strong amount of palm oil produced through those three months. So really that's drives or explains some of the reason why Q1 and Q2 was Q1 was better than Q2. In terms of the internal factors or factors that aren't completely out of our control, we had some issues at the mill, unfortunately. Really frustrating, really, because April was quite strong compared to last year, and then May and June production was materially lower than it was through those months last year. And really, what we're looking at there is, you know, the number of days that the mill wasn't operating had increased this year to around about 20 days. So the fruit is where it's frustrating. I guess the fruit was there, but we probably left around 4,000 tonnes of production on the table. And really that's down to three factors. We always have an element of boiler maintenance during the high season. You have to put down over 1 week and usually a 4-day period, but it ended up being 7 or 8 days through this high season. We also had, the mill, certain elements of the mill were not running continuously, and we're running them in batch systems, which was impacting our overall capacity of the mill. So, you know, if in simple terms, rather than running 60 ton per hour, we're running at 45 tons per hour. And clearly in the high season, where you're running every day, you're sort of nursing the mill through the period, and you can assess things at the end when we start to move into the low season. And the third factor was the de-oiling tank. We had a breakage in our de-oiling tank, which is a manufacturing issue, and we'll be likely subject to an insurance claim. So really some additional boiler maintenance, some batch system versus continuous system issues, which impacted our overall capacity, and the de-oiling tank, which really was unfortunate and largely out of our control. I guess the question is, what are we doing about it? The boiler issue, we announced last year where we're acquiring, and we're now in the process of installing a second boiler. This will be quite important because it'll mean during the high season, when we need to give the first boiler a rest, which is normally 3 to 4 days, all things being equal, we won't need to do that next year in the high season. We'll be able to switch to the second boiler. So I guess like for life as this year, we're talking another 7 to 8 days, of extra production. We had our mill manufacturer out. We've been assessing the half-year results, and there's a few tweaks that we can make to the mill, which will resolve this batch versus continuous issue, and it looks to be running really well now. So that factor is resolved, and the de-oiling tank, it'll be an insurance claim in relation to that. So we've looked at what's what went wrong, and we think the frustrating thing, as I said, there was a mountain of fruit around, particularly through February, March and April, and not to be able to deliver on all of it held back results, which went from, I guess, what could have been a super return period to a good to very good period overall. We're looking at first half results again, being 22% growth in revenue. The gross margins last year, I think, were 26%, and we think that will be closer to 30% this year. And we also, on the back of high revenue numbers, expect the EBITDA margin to increase as well. And of course, those who have been following us quite closely will remember we refinanced all our senior debt down from 10% to roughly 7% through the course of last year. So we'll get a benefit of interest expense reduction, a material drop this year. So we're looking online to reduce great results again, but it could have been amazing if not for the reduction impacts through the high season.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, well, moving forward here then, Lincoln, and you've announced some news today, the formal commencement of a second palm oil project. Take us through this. And like you said, even though I've been reading through the RNS here, and even though this production, like you said, you had a couple of one-off problems, and even though sales were down, like your revenue was up, and the prices you got were better. But this project is obviously going to be very interesting, because you mentioned this one has the potential to be much larger and more profitable than the original one in Côte d'Ivoire. Is that correct?
That's right. We think in time the AMY, the first project, should on a standalone I moved to around about £100 million valuation, and we're currently capped at about £35 million. So as long as we continue to grow the production for that meal, that's already effectively locked in. And whilst there was some capex through 2016, particularly the boiler and the storage, we expect capex moving forward to drop significantly at the ANY project. But we've also indicated that part of our strategy, one is to grow the production at ANY, and two is to look to expand now that the business is stabilising and profitability is well known. And Gujarat is a land site that we have to the west of Abidjan. It's a roughly 2.5 hour drive where we've got 24,000 hectares of contiguous land to execute a palm oil development, which will be more company estates than we do have in ANY. And certainly, as I said, I think the ANY valuation in time can move up to £100 million on its own. I think the Gujarat, fully execute over 7 years can be worth around £200 million. The way we're executing that, we're laying the foundations ourselves. We've done all the relevant feasibility and processes, environmental, social, etc. on the land, and now we're executing and putting in a nursery similar to what we've got in ANY. And the nursery itself actually becomes a small profit centre. I think we make about €400,000 a year out of the ANY nursery. So setting the nursery up is the first step, and then the first pilot estate. And then we expect to do some of this from internal cash flow, but what we would have always indicated is we will look to do this in partnership, similar to how we got ANY through to where it is now, and look to bring a funding in at the project level rather than raising money at Topco, which doesn't make sense for a project which is of this size compared to our market cap, but also the long time frames to full cash flow. So we have a lot of groups that are interested in working with us, given the benefits our projects bring to local smallholders in the community. A lot of people are willing to get involved, so we're working through those at the moment, and we'll determine an appropriate partner in time. But I think one other thing which is quite positive at Gujarat is whilst it will be more driven by company estates, we feel there is enough smallholder support there, and with our entry to the market and feeding of plants to smallholders to support a smaller meal to go in the initial stages, so to produce some, to move into production relatively early. And we're assessing feasibility on a 15 to 30 ton meal, so looking at production of somewhere between 15 to 30,000 tons of crude palm oil in that region, which is something which will bring cash flow to the project to assist any funding requirements that we need to bring. But of course, it will increase the valuation of the project at a much earlier date. So it's a significant scale project and increases, I guess, our potential market cap or valuation of assets from $100 million, which we think is what ANY could be worth in time, to another potential $200 million, which you'd think at least we would have 150% of, with a project partner like it to come in. So a really strong increase in the scale of the overall company's operations.
Mm-hmm. And talking about expansion, you previously mentioned Ghana. What's the news there then, Lincoln?
Yeah, we were hoping, or the plan was really this year, after stabilising the Anwaras, to have at least one, and we've obviously got the Guitry up and running, but potentially two projects. You know, our interest in Ghana has been well known for some time. We've looked at a combination of greenfield assets and businesses, existing businesses to acquire. Nor Palm, which we announced we're in discussions with probably 6 or 7 weeks ago, is a company that we're interested in. We, you know, nothing formal to announce yet, but we're working on it at the moment, and I think we're, you know, moving towards you know, a conclusion in some shape or form. But we, you know, feel that this would be the best way for us to build a base of assets in Ghana, to do it with an existing business, which gives us a platform to look at other existing businesses and less developed businesses as well. So as soon as we have something that is able to be announced, you know, we'll update the market as to where we are with Ghana. But we're, you know, we think it's an interesting diversification for us to have Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana, and we think there's the potential to develop another significant block of assets to the western part of Ghana within striking distance of our first project.
Marvellous stuff, Lincoln. It sounds like you're doing stuff very busy there. Things are happening. And if people are listening right now and they're not following you on Vox, but like the sound of what you're doing there, could you give them 3 reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please, on Vox?
Justin, I think it's pretty consistent with previous statements. Really, the production, or the revenue and profitability of the first project is going to be materially higher again this year. As I said, the interest costs that we have brought our interest rates down to will mean that net profit after tax will be again materially higher. I think as a multiple of EBITDA, we're, you know, sitting around 6.5 to 7 times, and, you know, I guess a company that has zero tax, so it's more akin to a 5 times EBITDA. So for a palm oil company, that's you know, probably roughly half or even 1.5 times less than most companies trade at. We have delivered, and we continue to live on what we promised, largely in almost every area. The, you know, we've got the first dividend coming out in the next 7 weeks to shareholders. We are now expanding our asset base, so Guitry is away and running, and we think there's going to be some interesting news to come in terms of project partners and executing early stage production there. And, you know, we're hopeful of doing something in Ghana, and as soon as we know, have something to say, we'll come out and say it. So the footprint of the company has really grown over the last 6 months on the back of 2 or 3 years of good steady growth at Project One, and we're now, you know, building an asset base which makes us potentially a very, very significant company in the years to come.
Marvellous stuff. Lincoln, good to chat to you. And like you said, you're very busy, so hopefully we'll be chatting again very soon. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Thanks for having me.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Joe Andrade, CEO, and Dr. Peter Hollins, Chief Scientific Officer of Wide Cells. That's WDC ticker. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you for having us.
Good morning.
Just checking Peter's there. Good morning, Peter. Not speaking to you before. Welcome to the podcast. Okay, that's all right, Peter. Before we start, as always, Joe, for someone who's listening but is not aware of what you do at Wide Cells, could you give them a brief summary as to the business is all about, please?
Yes. So Wide Cells Group, we are a healthcare services company focused on providing stem cell services and groundbreaking insurance for stem cell treatment. And we have three business divisions. One is aimed into resolving one of the biggest problems in the healthcare market at the moment, which is to make stem cell treatments accessible and affordable through the world's first stem cell insurance plan that we have developed for families that have stored their baby's umbilical cord blood, which is a powerful resource that can be used to treat more than 80 diseases today. Mainly blood diseases and disorders. We have also a division that we call Wide Cells, where we provide families the possibility of storing the umbilical cord blood stem cells with us to protect the families against the family against future illness. We also conduct research at the Institute of Stem Cell Technology in Manchester. And we have a third division, which is White Academy, focused on education and training for medical professionals and for enterprise, which includes insurance companies, insurance brokers, and also to generic population and patients so that they can understand the benefits of stem cell technology better.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so listen, it's been a busy few days for news flow at White Cells. Not one, but two launches. Firstly, your Cell Plan e-commerce platform is now live, meaning people in the UK can purchase your stem cell insurance product directly. But how does it exactly work, Jao?
So there are two models that we have developed. One of them is we have started to enter partnerships with companies that store umbilical cord blood stem cells for families. And these are companies that are called cord blood banks. We have entered the first agreements with a cord blood bank in the UK, which is a company called BioVault. They are one of the most accredited cord blood banks in the world. They have more than 25,000 clients already, so which means more than 25,000 cord blood samples stored. But these families have paid around £2,000 to store their baby's umbilical cord blood for periods of up to 30 years. But if they need to use the stem cells in the future to treat blood cancer, for example, the treatment might cost up to £300,000, which means that the majority will not be able to afford it. So that's why we've developed Cell Plan to turn this potential £300,000 bill into a policy that costs less than £15 a month. Now, in this agreement with BioVault, all new clients, so expecting parents that are now deciding to store their baby's umbilical cord blood, BioVault is including to all of them the first year of the insurance policy, which means that for a Cell Plan, we just need to retain those clients. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the existing database, which means families that have already stored their baby's umbilical cord blood, then we are targeting them directly through the e-commerce platform, which basically means they can log into the platform, generate a quote. We can then receive the applicant details, conduct the health questionnaire, collect payments, and issue the insurance policy digitally, all in a seamless process. So that's one model which is working with cord blood banks to provide the Cell Plan to their clients. The other model is there are other cord blood banks in the UK that meet our quality criteria. And what we have done with the e-commerce platform now is we have the ability to offer the Cell Plan directly to these families as well. So the e-commerce platform allows us to work not only with cord blood banks, but to sell the insurance policy directly. And very easily, we can adjust the terms and conditions and translate it into another language and deploy the platform in other markets as well. And we are fully licensed already in Europe, which means we can scale up the business very quickly.
Okay. And so on what kind of impact on sales and revenue do you expect this to have?
Well, this has, in principle, I expect it to have a very big impact because we can serve more families that up until now had stored their baby's umbilical cord blood but do not have an insurance for treatment. So there are tens of thousands of families already in the UK. There's other countries in Europe that where combined there's hundreds of thousands of families. Almost a million families in Europe have already store their baby's umbilical cord blood. We are expecting very high take-up for new clients and also very high penetration rates for existing clients that have already stored their baby's stem cells. So in the first year, we are targeting 10,000 policies and we generate around £50 from each insurance policy sold. More importantly, this means recurrent revenue because if families are paying to store their baby's stem cells for 30 years to protect the family against future illness, why wouldn't they renew the insurance policy for the same 25 or 30 years? Which means looking into our company, we should look into client lifetime value, which basically means if they're paying £50 a month, each client might be worth £750 to £1,000 for us in our database.
I understand. And regarding, you know, the rollout you mentioned there, now the purchase of cell plan via the platform is currently only available in the UK to customers that have stored their stem cells with BioVault. Now, you're clearly targeting a much wider market. So what's the plan for a further rollout, Joe?
Yeah, so we've two things that have already happened in the past few weeks. One is all new clients from BioVault are offered the first year policy. Existing clients from BioVault can now purchase the cell plan through our e-commerce platform. And in the upcoming weeks, we'll make the product available to families in the UK that have stored their baby's umbilical cord blood in cord blood banks that meet our high quality standards. So if they meet our criteria, they will be able to purchase it. In terms of future rollouts, is we are looking to start rolling out the product in European countries. Perhaps Spain will be the first markets, and then very quickly entering other markets, but also outside Europe. And we already have an agreement with Brazil, and we are trying to fast track the process to make the product available to families in Brazil as soon as possible as well.
I understand. Okay, so that's launch one. Let's go into launch two, which is the dental market. And you're starting selling a new product called Indus, which I believe has been approved for sales across Europe. Can you tell us what it is and how it's to be used, please?
Yeah, so here, in terms of the Indus product, Indus is a synthetic bone. And because we have the advantage of today having Peter on the call, I'll let Peter, go into more detail into the technical side as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, Joe. Absolutely delighted that Indus is now part of our product range. As Joe mentioned, it is an artificial bone, and it's used two applications. The first and the second are surgeons. The great advantage with Indus is that it is much better than the current options that are available to regenerate bone, which are things like donated human bone, or even in some instances, people are using animal bone to treat humans. Mm-hmm. Now, clearly, this is not an ideal situation because we have the potential for infection from these kind of procedures. And also that the tissue could even be rejected by the recipient patient. So Indus, our artificial bone, does not have any of these properties, so it's completely inert. But what it does do is stimulate new bone formation. I actually saw a procedure the other day using this, and one of the great advantages is that when Indus becomes in contact with the fluids in the operation site that the dentist is working on, it actually absorbs those fluids almost immediately, and this enables it to stay exactly where the dentist wants to place it. Mm-hmm. This makes the procedure much quicker, both for the dentist and for the patient, and both of those would be very grateful for that. This is a major advantage, apart from the other things that I mentioned, such as infection, rejection, and so on. We are also in the process of developing a product where we will use Indus in combination with stem cells. And the concept here is that if Indus works really well on its own to make new bone formation, if we use the product Indus with stem cells, then the bone formation is very likely to be much quicker and much more effective and much more robust in the long term. So in our Institute of Stem Cell Technology in Manchester, we'll start a research project very soon to assess the properties of stem cells with Indus to develop a groundbreaking product.
Okay, yeah, I was just going to say, there seems a bit of a change to stem cells. But then you sort of explained it, how they're going to work together. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's interesting because we'll be using stem cells known as mesenchymal stem cells. And these can be found in places like dental pulp inside a tooth, the umbilical cord itself, fats extracted during liposuction. And these mesenchymal stem cells can make a range of tissues, including bone. They also make muscle and connective tissue. But in this context, they would be specifically used to create new bone at the site of the of the bone reconstruction surgery. So it's bringing out stem cells to the greater clinical use, which is absolutely perfect from my point of view.
Absolutely. Okay, well, extra stuff. Exciting times ahead, guys. And Joe, back to you. For people listening right now and they like this area you're in, obviously stem cells are now in the dental arena. And can you give them, and then, you know, they're not following you yet, but they see potential here like you do. Can you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please?
Of course, I could give 20, but I'll keep it short into three reasons now. So we are very innovative because we have delivered the world's first end-to-end services solution, which is focused on making stem cell treatments accessible and affordable globally. We are award-winning. We've been ranked the 21st most disruptive company globally by Disrupt 100. And we have not been nominated for Life Sciences IPO of the year 2016 by Biotech and Money. And we have multiple revenue streams. We have Cell Plan, which is already starting to build revenues. We have White Cells Research, which is already revenue generative. We have White Cell Storage, which are expected to start generating revenues later this year. And we have White Academy, which the revenue structure is being developed. And also, we are looking into starting to generate revenues later in the year. And all of this in a market that is growing really fast. There is a proven demand with more than 3 million people that have already banked their stem cells. We have a defined development poised for rapid growth. And we have an all-star team to execute the plan.
Excellent, guys. Good to chat to you, Peter and Joe. Thanks very much. Hopefully we'll speak again very soon. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bonnie Hughes, mining specialist at Northland Capital Partners. You all right, Bonnie?
Yes, I'm very good, Justin. Hey, Justin, I happened to see the big gash in your head from the photo on Twitter when you were on holiday. Did you get a concussion?
It was my son. My four-year-old son came out of that uninjured. He landed on my head with his teeth first. He came out with hair in his teeth from my head. And I noticed blood from somewhere. I thought it was from him, and because I was okay. And then it turns out he was okay. And I had blood running down over my eyes and everything. So I was okay. Just went into the hospital. It was just inconvenient because it was the first 10 minutes of our holiday. We jumped in the pool and I had to go straight to the hospital. So in my trunks almost. I had to put something on. But it was all okay. It's getting better now. And my son looks at it every day now. And, he's only four and he tells me it's getting better. So that's an expert opinion from him. He said, yeah, it's getting better. But it's fine. It's all fine. But it looked a lot worse than it was. And the blood was just pouring out. So it's not as bad as it looked, but thanks for asking, Bonnie. I'm still here. You haven't got rid of me yet.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
All right, what are we chatting about, Bonnie? What are we chatting about today?
Well, we're going to talk about Keras Resources today.
Okay.
Not that there was news specifically on Keras, but there was news on Calidus, which is the Australian listed that they spun out of all their gold projects.
Yeah, that's right. So, that's on the RNS on that, the high grade gold. Yes, go for it.
That's right. So basically, at this point, Keras owns 31%, mm-hmm. and they have, with further drilling, they can earn up to 60%. Mm-hmm. So the results that came out today, so they're doing a 10,000-meter drill program, and so the 11 RC drill holes that came out today are on this portion called the Gap Zone. And the Gap Zone is in between the east and west, and previously they thought that maybe there was no continuity, but the drill results are showing, hey, there is complete continuity between the east and the west zone, and the results are actually quite good. So you've got about 2 meters at 5.58 grams per ton near surface, mm-hmm. and so if you look at all of the drill holes that are there, they're all close to surface and pretty really decent grade. So this deposit is shaping up to be quite well, and all they have to do is prove up a resource of about 500,000 ounces within 18 months of the spin out, and they will own a further percentage of the deposit.
I see. Yes, I've had Dave Rees on quite a bit. And I see that the share price is reacting positively to this. I mean, as we're talking right now, and obviously this may change depending when you listen to the podcast, but it's up 15%. So, it's looking very good, isn't it, on this?
Well, it must be all of the listeners that you have that are saying, hey, I've got to get in on this stock.
That's it. Yeah,
but
yeah.
So they're also planning to do another 2,000 meters into mm-hmm. the current resource. So the Klondike, they have a resource there that's in the inferred category. So they want to change that to indicated. And just to explain what inferred is, it just means that the drill spacing is further apart. So when they move it into indicated, they're basically doing closer spaced together drill holes, which gives them more confidence about how big the deposit is and what's really there.
I understand. Cool. Excellent stuff. So, you're saying as a mining specialist, this is good news. And like I said, the market is taking this good news, but you see this as good news. Yes, Bonnie?
Yes, it's very good news for, it's shaping up to be a quite a decent deposit. I mean, they still have a lot of drilling to go on, but the results that are coming out are quite good. So it's certainly one to keep an eye on because they will have further news flow with more drill results coming out because they're planning to finish this drill program by the end of this quarter. So you will definitely see some more coming out. And this is only about 20% of the planned drill program that's coming that they're doing for this quarter.
Marvellous. Okay, do you know what? Hopefully we get Dave Reeves on, because he's a regular on the podcast, so hopefully we get him on himself, and he can chat through it too. But thanks for covering that, Bonnie. Marvellous stuff, and hopefully we'll speak next week.
Okay, I hope to see you speak with you next week too. Have a great day.
All right, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, they were there yesterday. Rose Petroleum, R-O-S, is a ticker there. E-R-O-S-E, like Rose, I suppose. At four, Primoris Investments, or Prim. I've seen that mentioned quite a few times on social media. I think people, these are all connected, I think. In fact, Rose not, but a few of these connected with the Horse Hill and Weald Basin in the top five today. At three, well, this is not, Ascent Resources, but it's always there. AST, one of the most followed companies on Vox Markets of all time, that was. At two, Alba Mineral Resources, ALBA, of course, they've got an investment in Horse Hill. And number one, it's UK Oil and Gas, UKOG ticker, of course, deeply entrenched in the Horse Hill Basin there. All right, top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Kerash Resources, KRS, High Grade Gold Drill Results at the Warrawoona project in Australia there. At four, Amrit Pharma, AMYT. Haven't had a lot of news from these guys for a while. We have to get them on the podcast, hopefully. Highly positive long-term study results for Lojuxta. At three, Ariane Silver. This was from yesterday. There was an issue with our data provider yesterday who supplied RNSs, the feed, and we got this late, but this was from last 24 hours. So commencement of drill program from AGQ, Ariane Silver. At two, today's RS Strategic Minerals, SML, program of works granted at Hans Camp. And number one, the most liked RS on the platform today was from Georgian Mining Corporation. GEO is the ticker there. And the update at the Kavimo, Bolnese East and regional targets. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.